when I went to joined in Brooklyn in 73, he was there. He was he had just begun his editing career working on the Chaitanya Charitamrita at that time, and then he, of course, edited straight through. He did the Back to Godhead as well as Srimad Bhagavatam's beginning in Canto 5, I believe. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and Prabhupada's portion of 10. He edited all those books. And we'll, as we go along, we'll see what editing entails. But the whole reason why it's important to present this about the editing is that for the last, I don't know, 10, 12 years, there's been an issue that's developed over revisions. Actually, it began with the revised Bhagavad Gita in 1983. And this is the background history, which I don't get into here, is that when Srila Prabhupada came to America, as most of you know,
he had his three Bhagavatam volumes, his first canto, that he had produced at great effort in India over a period of a few years, beginning in 1960, I think it was. And he had an editor there, I don't know who it was exactly, but Prabhupada checked everything, and so, you know, those were his books, it was his ammunition, that he felt, now I have something substantial, I can come to America, you know. So the books were very important, and he himself would distribute them, famously right on the boat. He sold a set to the captain, you know, before he even landed, he was distributing books. So when Prabhupada finally began to make some headway in early 1966, the first devotee he met, the first person who was going to become a devotee, was Hayagriva Prabhu. And, you know, you can easily see how this was Krishna's arrangement. Hayagriva was an English teacher in Ohio. He was a professor at that time. And he had taken a leave of absence. He had gone to India. Many devotees don't know this, that he and Kirtananda went to India looking for a guru in 1965. And how did they get to India? On the Jaladuta. Yes, they took the same boat that Prabhupada came on. They took the cargo boat. It was cheap. And they were able to go. Interesting little factoid. But anyway, so he met Hayagriva, and then Hayagriva became his first editor. When 26 Second Avenue happened, and, you know, Prabhupada had a whole closet full of manuscript for the second canto that needed to be retyped and so forth. So there's a lot of work to be done. And Hayagriva launched in, and that was the first book he did, was the first canto. And then there was the Gita, right? The Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada also had his manuscript for the Bhagavad Gita. And so Hayagriva was working on that. But this was 1966. Nobody could know any Sanskrit and all of these special terms. And when you read the Bhagavad Gita, even today, it's not an easy book, right? So you can imagine back in 66, they're trying to transcribe, and so many mistakes happened. And yet that was our Gita. You know, after the first abridged edition, there was the Macmillan Gita, came out in 72, I believe it was. And when I joined in 73, that was our Gita, you know, when we worshipped the Gita, we read the Gita. But Prabhupada always was anxious, you know, he told Hayagriva and Jayavaita Maharaj, and there's so many letters that we'll see, a few samples, that he wanted these books brought up to the highest standard possible of English and also the Sanskrit. He's the one who introduced this whole thing of transliteration and the diacritic marks according to the academic standard. He wanted these books accepted in academia and amongst all scholars. He was very anxious for that. And he wrote, as we'll see, one letter. He told Pradyumna Prabhu, who was his main Sanskrit editor over the years, one mistake ruins the book. It kills the whole book if there's a mistake. And Prabhupada himself was pointing out mistakes in the first printings that had to be fixed on the next printings. So some devotees, you know, they don't know this history. And they think Prabhupada spoke the book, and they typed it out, and they printed it. And editing is just an unnecessary part of it. But it's not. The reason why we have so many books, the reason why Prabhupada could produce so many books, because he gave the book over to his editors and proofreaders and production, and he went on to the next book. Usually, for an author, you know, what they'll do is they'll write a book, give it to the editor. The editor will make marks and send it back to the author, and he'll check all of the changes. And in this way, you know, he'll reject some of them, make more suggestions. But that way, you don't produce 50 books in 10 years. You know, we wouldn't have the volume. Prabhupada was also interested in obviously producing the whole Bhagavatam, the teaching of Lord Chaitanya, the Nectar of Devotion, the Krishna book, all the books that he produced. So this was how it was possible. He trusted his editors, and especially Jayavaita Maharaj, he gave a letter, I accept, I trust him to do the right thing. So with that kind of as a background, you see, we'll explain further. But editing was a critical part of it. English, as well as the Sanskrit and Bengali. These devotees gradually became more and more competent. So as the years go by, there's fewer and fewer mistakes. Everyone knew, you know, the verses Prabhupada was quoting. They could hear him better. They knew more of the philosophy and that, like that. But the early books, such as Bhagavad Gita, and even the TLC, which I just did, which was the first book, almost the first book after Bhagavad Gita, there was a lot of problems with them. So now with that as a background, we'll begin. And this is one of the reasons why it's an important issue. Many of you have seen this book. Why we should buy Srila Prabhupada's books only from the BBT. I won't get into all of the history, but there's another group that's printing Prabhupada's books called the Krishna Books Incorporated. And they have the legal right to do that. Any book that was printed before Prabhupada disappeared, they call them pre-78 books. But they're not supposed to, you know, legally they're not supposed to spread them widely, but they do. It's supposed to be for devotees can buy them and put them on the shelf as historical books. I have this book. I have one of the originals. I also have a set of those first Bhagavatams, which is my most precious possession. You know, but I don't read it regularly. I read the edited versions. But this particular version, it's a smaller version. This book is not printed by the BBT, but by Krishna Books, Inc. None of the proceeds go to the BBT. Srila Prabhupada wanted his books printed exclusively by the BBT, and we'll read a letter in a minute. Yeah, you can understand. There's also a financial aspect here, is that the BBT is not a profit-making organization. There's a certain formula that Srila Prabhupada set up. A certain amount of the money goes to reprint the books, so they're always in print for distribution. And other portion of the price of the book goes for funding things like temples, making loans for temple maintenance or things like that. Prabhupada gave a list of things that you can use that money for. So when we buy books outside of the BBT, then we're draining off Prabhupada's lifeblood, you know, from his movement, really. So it's important to realize, even though the book may cost a little more, the money is going into the BBT and it's nourishing the whole institution. So you should be aware of that. Sometimes it's very tempting. Not only the Bhagavad Gita, but other older books are for sale, and they're often cheaper. They can print them en masse, they print them in India, whatever. And they undersell the BBT. But that's we're cutting off our own nose to spite our face if we think that it's an advantage to buy those books. So here's Prabhupada's letter to this effect. This is from 1974. He's writing to all ISKCON centers, "My dear disciples, please accept my blessings. Now that our ISKCON is growing into a huge worldwide organization, it has come to my attention that sometimes centers are printing my literature, taking collection and spending all outside the jurisdiction of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. This must not go on. What to speak of spending completely outside of ISKCON? This is within ISKCON. I specifically formed the BBT to invest in it exclusive rights for the printing of all literature containing my teachings, writings, and lectures. In this way, the collections are to be divided 50% for printing new books and 50% for construction of temples. The BBT can authorize the center to print, as in the case of foreign translations, with the agreement that when the foreign printing becomes financially solvent, they will pay royalties to the BBT. But all printing of ISKCON literature must be by the BBT or under their sanction and approval. If temples print independently, it will be at the cost of the books I am myself printing. and could eventually cause the financial ruin of the BBT, meaning I could not order new books from the printer or have sufficient funds for construction of temple projects. And what he doesn't mention here is that production of more books. In other words, it takes some money to produce the books in the first place. That's also part of it. I trust this is now clear and you will all do the needful. If you have any questions in the matter, you write to the GBC. So this is Prabhupada's instruction, and you can see how important it is for the furtherance of and the growth of the institution. Okay, so now here's a question, like I was mentioning, why edit Prabhupada's books at all? Prabhupada himself saw the material shortcomings of his English. This is from his, what we call the Delhi Bhagavatams. These are the ones that were printed in New Delhi and Prabhupada brought with him himself, the old Bhagavatams, the original, the fifth chapter. We know, this is a quote, we know that in our honest attempt for presenting this great literature conveying the transcendental message of reviving God consciousness of the people in general, as a matter of re-spiritualization of the world atmosphere, is fraught with many difficulties. Regard being had to the facts that our capacity of presenting the matter in adequate language, especially a foreign language, will certainly fail, and there may be so many literary discrepancies in spite of our honest attempt to present it in the proper way. Now, anyone with a little English knowledge will say, well, wait a minute, that's not a full sentence and there's so many misspellings. So even this little statement requires editing, isn't it? And Prabhupada himself is recognizing that. And it was he who gave Hayagriva the book and said, yes, please make it right. Hayagriva said, oh, I can improve this. Prabhupada said, yeah, please do it. And he gave him the whole Delhi Bhagavatam and please work on it. And he did. And that's what we have now. With a little few changes that were made in 1976, we're still reading that Hayagriva's editing. And he was the main editor, as we'll see. So therefore, Prabhupada had Hayagriva edit the already published first canto, put it nicely, Prabhupada told him. And that was the order that started the whole editing enterprise or service in the BBT. So what was done? What actually did editing do? How were the books produced? Book production methods necessitated extensive editing, and it was difficult. Now, if you have any questions while I'm speaking, please raise your hand, and we can discuss. Or remember them, write them down, and we'll answer later. So here's some details. For books after the Bhagavatam first canto, Srila Prabhupada typed out some of the manuscripts himself, such as the second canto and parts of the Bhagavad Gita. But mostly he dictated on the dictating machine. You've seen that, you know, famous thing where Prabhupada's sitting in New York, actually. I was there. And that was a scene that was repeated all over the world. Wherever Prabhupada was, he would get up really early, like 12 o'clock or something, you know, hardly sleep at all. And in those quiet morning hours, that's when he was producing all the books that we read and worship, you know, giving his famous Bhaktivedanta purports. So it could go much faster. He didn't have to worry about typing or retyping. He would and then the transcribers would type what he did, and it would go into the production. But there's a problem, because the transcribers often, you know, the transcribers, early transcribers, sometimes couldn't understand Srila Prabhupada's accent. I don't know if you realize it, but if you listen to the early tapes, Prabhupada gradually lost some of that Indian accent from so much, you know. But in the early days, it was there. His accent is British or Indian English usages, or his Sanskrit quotations, especially. It was just like, might as well have been Greek, you know, or anything. And sometimes he would cut off the words with repeated switching of the microphone on and off. You can imagine, you know, doing that hundreds of times sometimes is a mistake. So something is lost there. The intricacies of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness sometimes posed problems for the early editors. Also, there were no competent Sanskrit editors at first. Gradually, Pradyumna Prabhu became expert. You know, he really did become expert. And helped him. Especially Prabhupada thanked him personally for the Chaitanya Charitamrita work. You know, he did a tremendous amount of work on producing that in a short amount of time. So, who were the editors? The main editors were Hayagriva Das and Jayadvaita Das at the time. Now he's Swami. With Ray Ramadas and Satsarup Das doing extensive work. There were also, you know, collective editing jobs, like the Krishna book. Brahmananda got into it a little bit. I think even Kirtananda did a few pages. You know, it was a collective effort. There weren't that many devotees who knew English that well. But these are the main ones. And what did they do? They fixed transcription errors, corrected grammar and punctuation, revised wordings, reworked sentence structure, deleted redundancies, added text unintentionally missing, supplied chapter and verse references, and made all sorts of other corrections. It would be too technical for me to show you. I'm going to show you a few examples. But it's quite a... how can I put it? It's a very sensitive kind of work, because you're trying to preserve as much as possible Prabhupada's wording as well as the meaning. First, the most important thing is the meaning. The meaning Prabhupada intended to be conveyed has to come out. Right? That's the, because you have to always remember that these books are all translated into foreign languages. And so if the meaning is not clear in the English, it's certainly not going to be clear in the Spanish and the German and the French and the Chinese. That's the root, right? So this is a very important service, and you have to realize, well, what was the meaning Prabhupada wanted to convey? Sometimes it wasn't so obvious, and you have to get used to Prabhupada's usage of words. For example, the word inebriety. Now, if you look that up in the dictionary, you're going to find drunkenness, right? That's basically what it means. To be drunk is to be inebriated. Prabhupada used it in a special way. He would say, oh, in the spiritual world, there are no material inebrieties. You know? Well, what does that mean? Well, from the context, it means that negativities. There's no birth, old age, disease, and death. So that's a special use of the word. Now, it's not that we edited that out. That's going to be in there. But you have to realize, you know, in the context, it has to be clear what that means, because it's not going to be so obvious. Prabhupada would use the word envy. See, some of this comes from when he learned English back in the early 20th century in the Scottish Church's College. That's where he was actually an academic. He was going to get a degree, you know, but he refused it, you know the story, because he was part of Gandhi's movement. And so that was a protest, so he didn't actually get the degree, but he went through the school. So, the use of the word envy in English, not American English, and the books are edited for American English, also carries the meaning of to bear malice toward. We don't usually use that. If I envy someone, it means, oh, he's got something or she has something that I want, right? You don't usually think that that's why in Prabhupada's Krishna book, I think it is, it says, we should not envy any creature, even an ant. Well, I don't know, what does an ant have that I want? You know? It means that we shouldn't step on them. You know, we shouldn't feel indifferent to them or bear any malice. You know, so it's important to realize that when you're reading Prabhupada's books and also editing, oh, this is what the word means in context, and Prabhupada has this old English view. Another one I just came upon, which we're not going to change, but because you can understand, oftentimes you'll hear that, you know, Krishna created all beings, both moving and inert, right? Okay, the moving are, you know, human beings and animals, and the inert are like the trees and the plants, right? That division is there. But Prabhupada would sometimes say movable, the movable and the non-moving, or the movable and the inert. Well, movable just means you can move it. So I pointed out, well, this potted tree here, it's a non-moving living entity, but it's movable. Somebody moved it into the temple, right? So movable is not... So I looked it up in the Oxford English Dictionary, which is English. And sure enough, there's an obsolete use of movable, which means able to move. Moving, you see? So that's a minor one, which we don't need to fix. But there's hundreds of them like that. And you have to realize, you know, what you're dealing with, so that the meaning actually comes out and is not obscured because of some... meaning that Prabhupada was giving it, but it's not coming through in the American English. One of the ones I like is flavor. In English, flavor can mean fragrance. You know? Generally, in American English, you don't have that. Flavor means, you know, vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, whatever it is. You know, this Sandesh has a nice flavor, right? So, here's a funny instance of that. I don't think I've dealt with it here. In the Krishna book, there is a passage, you may recall this, where Rukmini is responding to Krishna's teasing, joking. Have you ever read that? Right? You remember reading Krishna book? Everyone should read Krishna book. And so she's responding to him very cleverly, you know, in many ways. And at one point she says, anyone, this is the way the old Krishna book said it, any woman who has tasted the flavor of your lotus feet, will not want to be with any other man, an ordinary husband, a material husband, you know? And it's twice in the paragraph. And I thought, and so did everybody, well, this is pretty intimate service, going and licking Krishna's lotus feet. But actually, what Prabhupada is saying there, if you look at the Sanskrit, relishing the fragrance, it came out tasting the flavor. Now, would someone argue that I shouldn't have fixed that? It's relishing the fragrance now, in the new edition. Because you get the wrong image. It's not, but Prabhupada thought he was conveying it, but it wasn't being conveyed. You see the fine points? You know, these books are for forever, and they're going to be translated into so many languages. So it's important to get it right. Yes, sir. Is it okay? All right. So let's look at narrow revisions during Prabhupada's time. It's not that we waited until Prabhupada disappeared and then we made all these revisions. During his time, revisions were going on. In the course of such extensive editing by diverse editors under sometimes trying conditions, mistakes were made. Therefore, during Prabhupada's time, he ordered that whenever his books were reprinted, these mistakes should be corrected. Now, he didn't make a big announcement, you know, in the whole society. He told his editors. Because Prabhupada was fully aware how devotees were, you know, worshipping these books as beyond the four defects. And, you know, they didn't want to know that there's some mistake in them, you know. But there were little things that Prabhupada noticed that he wanted fixed. So this was something that was internal in the small group of production crew. So now, after reading through a printing of Krishna Consciousness, the topmost yoga system, in 1970, and finding many mistakes, Prabhupada wrote to Brahmananda Das, then in charge of ISKCON Press, which was the forerunner or precursor of the BBT. So here's this letter, this important quote. In this way, I have read the book sporadically, not very minutely. So he's reading a few passages here and there. I think it should be gone through once more very carefully, and all the mistakes that are still existing there should be corrected. If the books are printed with spelling mistakes and other mistakes, that will be a discredit for our publication. So please see that editorial work is done very nicely. So this is kind of a mandate for the editors, you know, that when you see something, fix it on the reprint. You know, don't just let it go. Be very careful. And I would add, and I think you would probably agree with me, when Prabhupada says it'll be a discredit for our publication, and if it's full of mistakes, it's also a discredit for Prabhupada. People don't know that there's all these editors. When a book is printed, it's Prabhupada speaking to them. And if there's a mistake, they say, oh, Prabhupada made this mistake and this mistake. You see what I'm saying? So for Prabhupada's own, you know, prestige, it should be pukka. Let's put it that way. So let's see. And again, after Prabhupada reviewed the first printing of part of the second canon in September 72 and found several Sanskrit mistakes, Pradyumna Das, traveling with Prabhupada, wrote this in a letter to Jayadvaita Das. Now, before I read that, I just want to make a point. You may not know that now because it's so many years later, but during Prabhupada's time, everything was very urgent. Prabhupada knew he had only so many years, so many days, you know, that he could be on the planet. And so this comes out, especially, I was just watching that DVD that Yadava put together of the opening of the Krishna Balaram temple. I don't know if you've seen it. I highly recommend these DVDs following Srila Prabhupada because you get the devotees giving commentary. And one thing that comes out so much is that Prabhupada was pushing so hard to open this temple right away. Sarab Maharaj at that time, he was the architect, and Prabhupada was practically, he said, he's practically whipping him, you know, get the cement, do it more, you know, spend the money, and they were collecting money, there's so much, you know, because he wanted that done. The same thing was there for the books. The same thing was there for the books. In fact, the history of the BBT, I joined in Brooklyn, the old Brooklyn temple in 73, and we were the ISKCON Press there, was even before the BBT, was in charge, you know, we were producing the books. And most of the book distribution and warehousing was also going on in LA, because book distribution was starting to take off. But the main BBT was New York. But we were lollygagging around. For various reasons, the books weren't coming out. A whole year and the fourth canto didn't come out, you know, like that. So at a certain point, Prabhupada became impatient. The whole CC had been done and it wasn't being printed. So this was discouraging to Prabhupada. the whole idea of the book production, one of the main things is to keep Prabhupada alive and to keep producing books, right? So the books had to come out. So because of that, everything was consolidated in L.A. in May of 1975. And that's how I moved there. And then book then came the 17 books in 2 month marathon, kind of famous. I don't know if you know that. I took a small role in that. It was a nectar. But, you know, that was what Prabhupada wanted. Everyone should feel that urgency of book production. But in the process, you know, if you do it faster, then mistakes are going to be made. So that's another source of mistakes. But here's what Prabhupada said to Pradyumna. Pradyumna is writing to Jayawada Das, who's one of the main editors now. But Prabhupada said that if there is one mistake in one book, then you spoil the whole book. You murder the whole book. So also, besides Sanskrit errors, there have been many, many English errors also. So Prabhupada has been emphasizing lately about the great need for making our books free from errors. What's done has been done, Prabhupada said. But now we should try to do two things. Make sure that errors like these don't occur again, and start a listing of past mistakes in each book so that we can correct them when they are reprinted. Now, the whole issue is whether this order should have stopped when Prabhupada disappeared. And the society, the GBC in the early 80s, decided no, that this shouldn't be stopped, because by that time devotees were reading very scrutinizingly the Krishna book and seeing so many discrepancies. And it was decided that, okay, there should be a revision. That was the first main revision. On this order, that, you know, the planet of the trees, you know, so many mistakes. So they should be fixed, and many others. So this is one of the main books, and then the question, okay, mistakes should be fixed, who should fix them? This is the key, who should be the one? Everything comes down to a person. So Hayagriva Das and Jayawada Das were Prabhupada's most trusted editors, and they both did major revisions during Prabhupada's time. Hayagriva did Easy Journey to Other Planets, the TLC, that's Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and the Isha Upanishad, and Jayawada Das then did the first canto, chapters 1 and 2. In June, now this is a very important point, so pay attention to this history. In June of 1976, Jayawada Das personally presented to Prabhupada his revisions of the first two chapters of the Bhagavatam, and he began to read them aloud. After hearing the first few verses, Prabhupada interrupted and asked, "So what have you done?" Jayawada replied that he had revised the verses to make them closer to what Prabhupada himself had originally said. Srila Prabhupada responded, "What I have said?" Jayawada replied, "Yes." His Divine Grace then said, "Then it is all right." And that was that. The work was approved. Now this is an important pastime. And I'll explain, as you see, we go on. Because what Prabhupada is doing here is he's kind of giving Jayawada Maharaj his vote of confidence. And he says it explicitly in a letter, and personally also, is that he trusted the editors, especially Jayawada Maharaj now. And even though Prabhupada had heard these verses read to him, because if you listen to some of the early lectures, you'll find both Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, that the devotees would read from the book. You know, they'd chant the verse, like always, then they would read the translation, and if Prabhupada said, start reading the purport, and then he would stop them reading the purport and he would give some commentary. Or they would just read the translation and he would give his own lecture. So the point was, they were reading out of the book. And some devotees say, well, you know, and this is actually an argument that has some weight. Well, Prabhupada didn't say anything at the time, so why should it change? Some of those verses have been changed. And but this explains why, that it's not necessarily true that if Prabhupada had heard something read to him, it doesn't mean that it couldn't be revised with his approval. And these very verses, in the second, especially the second chapter, first canto, which was cited this morning, it's a very famous passage. You know, Shunbatam Sukata Krishna Punishava Nakirtana Savai Pungsang Paro Dharma. What is Dharma? You know, and by hearing one purifies the heart. Prabhupada spoke on them extensively, repeatedly. We made a book out of it. You may have seen it, Dharma, The Way of Transcendence. Have you seen that book? This is Prabhupada's lectures on that. So, those very verses, those very translations, Prabhupada heard read to him, and those translations Jayawada Maharaj fixed, bringing them back closer to what it was in the Delhi Bhagavatam. Hayagriva had made a few mistakes. He did a lot of good work, but he also made some mistakes. He was working fast. So, it was approved without Prabhupada's seeing the actual correction, trusting Jayadwaita to change the translations that he had already heard. So this also applies to the Gita, even though Prabhupada had already left the planet. Here he's saying, without hearing it, he's approving it. So that same principle is there. Same editors, Hayagriva and Jayadwaita. It's the same thing is there. So that's an important point. Now, Srila Prabhupada's confidence in Jayadwaita Das's editing. In June of 76, Srila Prabhupada wrote this in a letter to Radha Balaba. This was the same time that he just showed those things to Prabhupada. Concerning the editing of Jayadwaita Prabhu, whatever he does is approved by me. I have confidence in him. There's no other editor, or practically no other devotee who got that kind of devotee of confidence. This confidence of Prabhupada's in Jayadwaita's editing, which he expressed at other times as well, continued till Srila Prabhupada's final days. If you ever see that, you know, very moving video of Prabhupada lying and dictating, that's Jayadwaita holding the mic, and there's Pradyumna Das right there, you know. So this trust was maintained throughout. Now, here I'd like to do, it's a little technical, so if you feel sleepy, please stand up. But this is this point I just made. I'll make it in a little more detail here about these revisions on the Bhagavatam 1976. Some of the revisions Jayadwaita Das made were on translations that Prabhupada had heard read to him during class. These translations edited versions of the originals from the Indian Bhagavatam. Sometimes had serious problems. Yet Srila Prabhupada did not stop the class and order that the translations be fixed. Moreover, he later accepted Jayadwaita's revisions of these translations, brought closer to what Prabhupada had originally written, sight unseen. Therefore, the fact that Prabhupada heard or read a passage in one of his books doesn't mean he would disapprove its being revised. Nor are revisions that he never read automatically unauthorized. The same editor, Jayadwaita, that made those revisions. And, you know, yours truly was trained by him. So, okay. Now here's a remembrance from Shutakirti Prabhu, who wrote this book, What is the Difficulty? Nice, you know, his own memoirs with Prabhupada. Whenever Srila Prabhupada read his own books, it seemed as if someone else had written his books because he didn't read with the mind of an author looking for editing mistakes or grammatical errors. You know, there's a certain mindset to read a book. And is there any mistakes here? Otherwise, you just read through. Isn't it? You're not looking for it, especially things that aren't so obvious. You may catch a spelling mistake or something. But, you know, he wasn't reading that way. He was just relishing his own books. He wasn't reading as an editor. So that's an important remembrance. All right, so now we're going to look at some samples. And this gets a little technical, but I think if you're interested in Prabhupada's books, you should be interested here. So now here's 1-10. Now this is a verse, you know, it's a famous verse. What is it? Kama sanindriya priti labo jivete yavata. In this verse, Sudha Goswami is saying that one should not, with your life energy, should not be directed toward sense gratification, but toward inquiring into the Absolute Truth. So this is just a section of the synonyms that were left out or mistranslated or misedited. So this is how the translation looks now. Life's desires must not be directed towards the matter of sense gratification. One should desire only for a healthy life or self-preservation, because the life of a human being is meant for inquiring about the Absolute Truth, and nothing more should be desired by all occupational service. I'm sorry, this is the original translation that Prabhupada wrote. This is what Delhi Bhagavatam. Here's the editing. Life's desire should never be aimed at gratifying the senses. One should desire to live only because human life enables one to inquire about the Absolute Truth. This should be the goal of all works. And Prabhupada heard this read to him on October 21st, 1972 in Vrindavan. So you see what's missing in blue there. Only for a healthy life or self-preservation. That part was taken out for some unknown reason. So Jayadwaita put it back in. It's very simple. Same translation. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation. So is someone going to argue now that that shouldn't be put back in? Because it's a revision that, you know, Prabhupada didn't read, you know? It's obviously the right thing to do, right? So that's a simple one. There's others like that. A couple more. This comes right after that section. This is what Prabhupada wrote The firewood is a transformation of the earth, and smoke is better than the raw wood, and fire is still better because by fire we can derive so many benefits by superior knowledge, the Vedas. Similarly, Rajas quality of matter is better than tamas, but sattva quality is superior quality by which one can realize the absolute truth. Now, Hayagriva did a nice job, except at the beginning, you know, he left out a few things. Coal, firewood, is better than raw wood, and fire is even better. Now, where he got that from, I have no idea. There's no coal in there, you know, but that's what he put. Similarly, passion or rajas is better than ignorance or tamas, etc. So that was, you know, taken back to the original. Firewood is a transformation of earth, but smoke is better than raw wood. And he also put back in the derive the benefits of superior knowledge through Vedic sacrifices. Now, this was heard by Prabhupada on November 4th, 1972. He didn't say anything. You know, Prabhupada would often, he would just think of the Sanskrit. He was hearing the Sanskrit and he understood the meaning. You know, he wasn't scrutinizingly hearing and said, what did you leave out? You know, because it takes an effort to go from the Sanskrit to the English and see, well, is it correct? You know, but it was made correct later on. And I think we'd agree it's a good revision there. So now, with that in mind, now let's look at the revisions of the Gita. It's the Bhagavad Gita is overwhelmingly is what's an issue in many devotees' minds. Maybe you don't have much of an issue, but it's good if you can't. The whole point of this is that to give you, to immunize you, so that when you encounter this personally or online or by email or in any other way, you'll understand some of the arguments for the revised editions, especially Bhagavad Gita. So, review of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, just keeping in mind things we mentioned earlier, the way the books were produced required extensive editing by, especially in the early days, inexperienced editors, which inevitably resulted in mistakes. Prabhupada wanted his books free from mistakes, and therefore authorized his editors to make revisions on reprints. Prabhupada had full confidence in Jayadvaita Das as an editor, and accepted his revisions on the first canto of the Bhagavatam, sight unseen. Ordinarily, Prabhupada did not hear or read his books in an editorial mood attuned to catching mistakes. There are some instances where he did catch the mistakes, most famously cattle raising in 1842, I think, Bhagavad Gita. You know, it should be cow protection. It came out cattle raising, which is just the opposite. The cattle means that you slaughter them. You know, so after the... Now, this is interesting. This Prabhupada happened to give three lectures on this verse, which is unusual. Only on the third one did he make the comment. The first two, he went by without saying anything. Now, suppose he hadn't given that third lecture. Would it have been worthy of revision? Yes. It still means raising cattle for slaughter. You see? But probably, because he said it, everyone knows it should be changed. You see my point? Okay. So now you have missing text. This is the most, if you will, radical change, radical revision in the Bhagavad Gita. This paragraph is not there. It's even not the full paragraph. You see those dots in this famous verse about prasadam, patram pushpam palam toyam. If you happen to have a Macmillan Gita, you can access one and look up that verse. You will not find this whole paragraph, which was restored from the first printing of the Bhagavad Gita, which is before the Macmillan Gita, the little abridged one. Now, just listen to some of this preaching here. Why should this not be in the present Gita? No one can give me an answer to that. For the intelligent person, it is essential to be in Krishna consciousness, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, in order to achieve a permanent, blissful abode for eternal happiness. The process of achieving such a marvelous result is very easy and can be attempted even by the poorest of the poor without any kind of qualification. The process is so easy that even a leaf or a little water or fruit can be offered to the Supreme Lord in genuine love, and the Lord will be pleased to accept it. No one, therefore, can be barred from Krishna consciousness because it is so easy and universal. Who is such a fool that he does not want to be Krishna conscious by this simple method and thus attain the highest perfectional life of eternally bliss and knowledge? These powerful words of Srila Prabhupada's, part of a whole omitted paragraph at the start of the purport, have been restored. So is someone going to argue with me that should be left out? You know, it's ridiculous. Of course it should be restored. But if you distribute or if you read that Macmillan Gita, you will not see this. Okay. Here's another one. These are some of the more obvious changes. 10:21, it appears from this verse that the moon is one of the stars. Therefore, the stars that twinkle in the sky also reflect the light of the sun. The first editor, Hayagriva Prabhu, thought that this statement was unacceptable, so he deleted it along with the rest of the paragraph. The paragraph was restored in 1983. So this is the time, if you go back with me, back to yesteryear, when man was supposedly walking on the moon. I remember I hadn't joined the movement. I was in the hospital at the time with some heavy hepatitis, and I watched the moonshot. I watched him, you know, walk on the moon, so-called live, you know. So that was in the air, and the fact is, Hayagriva Prabhu, he never really accepted the cosmology, especially this part that all those stars up there, they're just reflecting the light of our one sun. You know, this is a challenge to our intelligence. We don't learn that in grade school, right? Those are all separate moons, stars up there, separate suns, right? So he just X'd that out. His motive was, you could say, was probably good. He said, people won't accept this. All this nice philosophy, and they'll read this, and they'll put the book aside. You see? So he was saying, well, this won't look good. So he just But he didn't have a right to do that. That was beyond the scope. And it came out in the Easy Journey. He did it in the Easy Journey, too, with the moonshot. And when Prabhupada learned that, he gave him a tongue lashing. You know? And it's a whole pastime. If you read how he saw his Transcendental Diary, he explains that. So that part, you know, even though it's a surrender for us to read that and to accept that, that has to be in there. The fact that these stars up there are reflecting the light of our sun. So that was restored. At the end of the introduction, seven verses from the Gita Mahatmya that Prabhupada spoke during dictation have been restored. And one verse Prabhupada didn't speak has been deleted. This is all illustrated in Responsible Publishing. Also, I have a bunch of CDs in my bag. Where's my bag? Over there. Which we'll hand out, or they'll be available at the table. Which has a lot of this and much more. You'll be able to see some devotees. So Gopi Pranandana Prabhu is on there, Jayavada Maharaj and others, explaining different points of the editing. It's a lot more. I'm just giving a sample here. So this introduction, now one reason it's so important is that you can hear this. There's no question that they were there, because this recording has been preserved. This is the first lecture, you know, in that whole compendium of MP3s you can get of Prabhupada. This is the first one. And that introduction, Prabhupada's dictating himself, and he quotes these Gita Mahatmya verses, but no one knew what they were. You know, no one could understand them, and so they deleted him. But they've been restored. In general, dozens and dozens of Sanskrit words, from single words to phrases to whole verses, have been restored in the purports. No one could hear them. You know, you had some fellow came in off the street do the transcribing. What is he going to know of some Sanskrit verse? He just put a little parenthesis in there, you know, and they just overlooked it. But later on, Pradyumna Prabhu could read the actual commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti or Baladev and say, oh, this is the verse he's quoting. This is the verse Prabhupada was quoting, you know. So that a lot of that, it adds to the weight of the book and the substance. Prabhupada wanted it. Did you know that the Macmillan Gita didn't have a translation for 8:18, but rather two versions of 8:19, and that the purport for 19 was appended to the full 18 translation? The translation for 8:18 has been restored and the purport put right. So this is a technical point, but who would know? The translations are very similar. But when you look closely, you see that there's a translation missing there and the purport's in the wrong place. 9:34. This is a very, very important verse. Anyone who studies the Bhagavad Gita, it's repeated in 1865. Just think of me, right? Manmanabhava Madbhakto. So here's the translation in the Macmillan Gita. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. So that, I'm sorry, this is the translation in the Revised Gita. But Krishna's essential instruction, become my devotee, isn't there in this translation from the Macmillan Gita. But it is there in the present edition. Prabhupada would quote this verse basically for that point. You know, what could be more important than that, you know, become my devotee? So somehow or other it was omitted, and it was, it was omitted there, and then it was quoted from there and put into purports of the Bhagavatam. You know, this is what happens. Prabhupada's quoting the verse. He doesn't give the translation. You're supposed to pick it up from the Gita. You go to the Gita, and there it is, without become my devotee. You know, so you can see how these things are important to revise in the Gita so that we can fix all the other books too. So that was a key one. Then 1854 is another one. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. Does anyone know that verse? Chant with me. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakanchati Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Vadbhaktim Habate Param. Critical verse, right? Prasanatma. Prabhupada often quote the verse for that purpose. You become fully joyful. It's not there. That word, that phrase is not there in the Macmillan Gita. Look it up. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes Supreme Brahman. He never laments nor desires to have anything. What happened to becomes fully joyful? This is the translation from Macmillan. How many times did Prabhupada quote this verse just to focus on that point, which is also mentioned in the purport? So you have the purport giving an explanation of a phrase that's not there in the translation. See the problem? Now it also appears in the translation in the book. Become fully joyful. Okay, a couple more. Sometimes they even become funny, as you'll see. 1029. There is also a planet of trees, the famous planet of trees, presided over by Aryama. Prabhupada said pit trees. It's a planet of ancestors. So nobody thought anything, you know. 1417. From the mode of passion, grief develops. The right word is greed, not grief. Lobha. Yeah. But they heard grief, so okay. The Sanskrit word is loba, this heard grief. 1027, the devotee, demigods and the demons, or the asuras, once took a sea journey. Nope. Srila Prabhupada said, there was a churning of the sea in which the devotee, demigods and the asuras took part. The transcriber heard journey for churning, you see. The demigods and demons churned the sea to get the nectar. So you see how important this is. It's funny now, but these words are being worshipped and repeated and preached. And, you know, we go into academia, everyone knows the Gita now, you know. You lose authority, you know, when you have this. It's very important to fix all this stuff. What to speak of all the translations, you see, in foreign languages. Okay, moving along. Meaningless words fixed. 13:1-2. Sometimes we understand, this is the purport, sometimes we understand that I am happy, I am mad, I am a woman, I am a dog, I am a cat. These are the knowers. That doesn't mean anything. Don't try to figure it out. And it's fixed to, notice the quotation marks. You know, sometimes we think, I am happy, I am a man, not mad. You see? That was misheard. Not mad, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a dog, I am a cat. Now, it's not the same person thinking all these things. These are different incarnations. So that's why you need the quotations. You see that? These are the bodily designations of the knower. That makes sense, right? Then here's one that doesn't make any sense. Again, at the end of the purport to the first verse in the second chapter, this realization is made possible by working with the fruit of being situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Now just think about that a minute. Is the fruit of being actually situated in the fixed conception of the real self? No. You know? But if you read that, you'll think, boy, I can't understand this. Maybe if I get advanced, I'll be able to understand it. No. Hopefully you'll never understand it, because if you think it makes sense, you're completely off, you know. So it was fixed. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruit of results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Ah, that makes sense. You see? It's very important, because when you're reading these books, especially for the first time, there's so many things that you can't understand. So if we can reduce that number and everything makes more sense, it helps people reading for the first time. What to speak of devotees who are reading for the 10th time, you know, that things make sense. Yes, Prabhu. I'm sorry? Fruitive. This is the word he used, and if you look it up, you know, it we can discuss that later. You know, there's a certain lexicon you have to become familiar with, and then, you know, the understanding. That's why it's so important to read these books in association, you know, if you can, so that you can get the culture, the language. Okay, so what about 434? This is one of their main points. You know, 434 is Krishna's famous verse about surrendering to the Guru. So here's what we had and here's what we have. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. It makes perfect sense. There's no question of it not meaning anything. But does it reflect the Sanskrit, and does it reflect what Prabhupada said? That's another question. So the new edition says the same thing except for the last sentence. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Now this became a huge issue because it seems to be a political change. You know, now there's many gurus, but for us there's only one guru, right? There's a group that thinks that this Prabhupada's the eternal initiating guru for the next 10,000 years. It's philosophically off. I won't get into that, but this is part and parcel of that idea. So this hit a nerve. You can see why. Now here's the original transcript. Try to know the truth of all these by approaching self-realized spiritual master with all submission, inquiries, and rendering service unto him. Such learned self-realized spiritual master initiates knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Now there's a mismatch there. You know, you have singular spiritual master, and they have. So something had to give. And Hayagriva went with the singular, and made perfect sense, because the previous sentence. But actually, that doesn't reflect the Sanskrit or the synonyms. And we'll look at that. So here's... Whoops, went too far. So here are the synonyms given by Prabhupada, the pertinent synonyms. Ubadikshanti, initiate. Now that's a plural verb, right? Te, unto you, jnanam, knowledge, jnanina, the self-realized. Now that's also plural, or it's not so obvious. Tattva, truth, darshinaha, the seers, plural. So grammatically, this is plural. And Prabhupada had mixed. So the Sanskrit is plural in the verb initiate, the twofold subject, the self-realized and the seers. Prabhupada's translation mixes singular and plural. Such self-realized spiritual master initiates knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Hayagriva Prabhu went with the singular throughout. It made perfect sense, but violated the Sanskrit. Jayadwaita Swami restored the plural in the last sentence and made it grammatical. And factually, this is what we have. And you know, this is the truth, is that there are spiritual masters, and you need to approach one of them, and he can give you knowledge. He or she can give you knowledge. So that's what the Sanskrit said. And we have also this translation from an obscure manuscript that was never published, written by Prabhupada. Prabhupada's expanded translation to 434 in his essay, Interpretations of the Bhagavad Gita, circa 1948. If you have the access to the database, you'll see there's a section there, writings before 1966 or something like that. Old manuscripts, some of them, they haven't actually been published, but they were collected and transcribed, and so you'll see this essay there. It is therefore stated in the Bhagavad Gita that, by the way, this whole presentation is available on my CD over there called PDFs and PowerPoints. If you're interested, you can see it for yourself. I also put it into a PDF if you don't have the PowerPoint program. It is therefore stated in the Bhagavad Gita that one who actually wants to have an access to the essence of Bhagavad Gita must himself engage in the service of a bona fide spiritual master by full surrender. In that position only, one can make bona fide inquiries regarding the Gita, and in that posture only, the self-realized spiritual masters impregnate the submissive disciple with the knowledge of the Gita because they have already seen the truth of it. So he's really given a little, you know, expanded translation here of that verse, and he uses the plural. So it's not that it was an alien to him. Okay. All right, now here's a few examples. Now this may get a little technical, so if you have any questions or whatever, please let us know. Now we're moving to the Isha-Upanishad. And the reason I did this, because this is what I did. Jayavada Maharaj did the Gita, and that's the most controversial one. But I wanted to kind of illustrate the kind of thing of the Isha-Upanishad, why the Isha-Upanishad was revised. The Isha-Upanishad has its own history. Every book has a history. There's actually four different versions of the Isha-Upanishad. Prabhupada wrote the Isha-Upanishad, serialized it in 1960 in his Back to Godhead paper. He was putting this out regularly before he started writing the Bhagavatam. And every couple of weeks he would print one. So he started serializing some books. He started serializing the NOD, actually the Bhakti Samhita Sindhu. He had the verses and everything. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Isha-Upanishad. Of course, he never printed all of them there because he stopped and came to America. But he started. And he had a whole manuscript for the Isha Upanishad. Only about, I think, 11 of those verses were actually printed as BTG. The rest he brought with him, that manuscript, which I had a photocopy of it when I worked on the Isha Upanishad. So that's the first Isha Upanishad. 1969, in America, Ray Rama edited that manuscript and we had the Isha Upanishad. That was one of the first books printed. In 1975 it was, not 74, Hayagriva revised it. And that was the Isha Upanishad we had for 17 years. His revision of the Isha Upanishad. In 1992, Jayad Weidemaraj asked me to take a look at it and see if we needed to do any further final revisions. So I had all three of those. I had the Prabhupada's original, I had the Ray Rama version, I had the Hayagriva version. And here are some of the things that I found that needed to be done. So here, this is the very first paragraph of the first purport. There's the invocation, and then there's the 18 mantras, right? So this is the first paragraph. And Prabhupada is talking about the Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, the different stages of realization. So here's what the 1960 BTG had. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Satchitananda Vigraha. Impersonal Brahman realization is the realization of his Sat, or eternity part. And Paramatma realization is the realization of Satchit, eternal knowledge, part realization. But realization of the personality of Godhead is realization of all the transcendental features, like Sat, Chit, Ananda, incomplete. Let's see, make this work. I think it's a mind of its own. It works when I don't need it, and when I need it, it doesn't work. There we go. So you see this phrase, I put it in blue, I don't know if you can see that. Incomplete. It's not incomplete. In space complete. Period. Very important period. Vigraha means form. Therefore the complete whole is not formless. Now the Satchitananda Vigraha, Prabhupada is referencing the first verse of the Brahma Samhita. Right? Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha. The whole point is the form. That's against the Mayavadis. There's a war going on against the Mayavadis. So Vigraha means form. He's referring back here. See? This is lost. See what happened? But realization of the personality of Godhead is realization of all the transcendental features, Satchit and Ananda, or bliss. In the personal concept, this is realized in complete form, Vigraha. It's not that it's realized in complete form. You see, and Vigraha doesn't mean a complete form. Vigraha means form. What happened was he lost that period, incomplete Vigraha. You see that? He just read that. This is an unusual usage of it. So here's what we came up with. Here's what 1974. It's the same thing. When one realizes Supreme Person, he realizes these aspects in complete form, Vigraha. That's not what was meant. This is what is meant. When one realizes the Supreme Person, he realizes these aspects of absolute truth in their completeness. Vigraha means form. There's a whole new idea that's coming out here. You see? So this was I thought was an important restoration of the original Prabhupada had. This is the kind of thing that I'm poring over. You know, this is what the editors do. Is this it? Is it acceptable? Does the meaning come out or not? And that's, you know, I did it for this book, the CC, and the TLC now, too. Okay, now here's just a straight omission. You know, here's a big paragraph here that was lost in the 69 and 75 version, sorry about that, but restored here. Now, it's easy, you can easily see why he left it out, because at that time, let's read this. How one can execute God-centered activities is elaborately explained in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami and read into English by us under the title of Science of Devotional Service of the Lord. We shall recommend this valuable book to all who are interested to guide their activities in the spirit of Isha Upanishad. Now Prabhupada, he hadn't written in NOD yet, you know, but he's anticipating that. And he even has a different title, you see that? Science of Devotional Service. So this was later published as the NOD. But in 69 it wasn't there. He didn't, Hayagriva didn't catch that. He didn't see it because he just worked off the 69 version. He didn't go back to this. And so that was lost. I said, well, that's a valuable little cross-reference here. You know, we have the NOD and Prabhupada's cross-referencing. So how one can execute God-centered activities is elaborately explained in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu by Rupa Goswami. We have rendered this book into English as a nectar of devotion. We recommend this valuable book to all who are interested in the form. So why shouldn't that be in there now? You know? So I was, because I went back to the original, I saw that and I restored it. All right, one or two more and then we'll do a little Krishna book. This is just another huge omission, and I have no idea why this was left out. This whole thing here, I didn't bother with the 74 edition because I just left it out also. But look at this, all this material that was lost. It's just a mistake. It wasn't intentional. The Isha Upanishad therefore directs us that we should not be busy for a temporary relief by worshipping the dependent demigods who can bestow upon us a temporary benefit. But we must worship the Absolute Personality of Godhead Krishna, who is all attractive and can bestow upon us complete relief from the material bondage by going back home, back to Godhead. Obviously, that should be in there, right? It's very substantial, so I put it back. You know, this is just by way of illustrating why these revisions are important. Just a couple of little things here. Again, omission of the important idea. He, Krishna, does not require a separate body or mind like us in material existence. As such, he does not require a separate body or mind. Conceive rather than perceive. This formlessness means that he has not got a form like ours, or he's devoid of a form which we can conceive, not perceive. He lost that and was restored here. These little, you know, it's a whole different concept, perceive and conceive, isn't it? All right, I think that's it for the Isho. Just a couple of Krishna book revisions. Now, this is my favorite chapter. I remember back in 73, we used to read Krishna book every night, you know. And when I first read this chapter, I said, this is a great chapter. This is chapter 21, Venu Geet, you know. And somehow this chapter really... So I started memorizing the English. And I memorized maybe a page of it. And as I'm serving out the morning halva, whatever we had, I'm reciting this chapter, and everyone was looking up, where is this coming from, you know. But then I discovered, when I revised the Krishna book, that a whole paragraph... I went ahead. This thing went off on me. The beginning of this. Yeah. That the very beginning of the chapter was cut off because it seemed to be redundant but wasn't. And I realized that because I'd already done the whole Bhagavatam and in the 10th canto. So I knew what was in there. You know, the Sanskrit we could compare it to. So here's this beautiful description of Vrindavan that was just left out. You know, it begins here. In this way, when the autumn season was so beautifully current, when the waters in the lakes and rivers became as clear as crystal, and was full with fragrant lotus flowers, the air was breezing so nicely, at that time Krishna, accompanied by the cowherd's boy, entered the forest of Vrindavan. Now this is the transcription of the tape which we have. There's only one book that we have the original tapes, and that's the Krishna book. And we have about 90% of the tapes. And you know why? Because Janarani Mata, bless her soul, wanted to hear those pastimes as she painted the Leela. And so she had the tapes copied. Otherwise they would send the tapes back and probably would reuse the tapes. Very frugal. Right? But in process we lost the original transcript, the original dictation. But for Krishna book we have about 90%. There's some that are lost. And this one we had, you can listen to it. It's definitely there. So I put that in, you know, I just edited it up, and there you have that whole section at the beginning of chapter 21, which sets the scene. And it's you know, it's a beautiful verse. I'll give you the verse. We'll change the pace. Kusamata vannadadishu smibringa jijikulla gushta sadaksarin mehidram madapata davagaya chariyanga sahapasupala balastuku javenam. So that's the Prabhupada's translating that, and it was lost, you know, but now it's restored, so... Hare Krishna. It'd be nice if we could just hear the Sanskrit, you know, maybe in Lecture Days we have to hear the English. So now here's a huge omission. Akrura. Now you know Akrura, I don't know if you know this, but all of the nine different processes of devotional service, they each have their exemplar. Let's run through them, see if you can remember. There's a verse, I maybe forget some of them. So hearing and chanting, who remembers? Donna Kelly, remember? who is the one who heard the Bhagavatam? King Purigat, right? And by speaking, Shukadev. So they are the exemplars for hearing and chanting. And then, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Who is it for Smaranam? Prahlad Maharaj, very good. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Lakshmi. Archanam Prithu, very good. Archanam, Vandana, what's the next? Vandana, prayers, Akura. And then we have servant, Hanuman, and friendship, Arjun, and Atmanivedanam, Bali. Very good. Very nice. So, Akura's prayers are famous. You know, there's a whole chapter there, I think chapter 40 or so. And here's the prayers. He's contemplating now, as he's going to Vrindavan, what's going to happen. And I don't know why, but that whole thing was missing. You know, and not only that, but instead of pray to the Lord, they have praise the Lord. He's praying. He's the prayer. He's the exemplar for prayer. So this whole thing, I won't read it all here, but as Akura began to think within himself, he was unfit for gaining the transcendental opportunity to see the Lord. He considers, and this whole idea, he began to think, by the grace of Krishna, everything is possible, and thus if he likes, I will be able to see him, just as a blade of grass floating on the waves of a river may by chance come near the shore and gain shelter. A conditioned soul, carried away by the waves of material existence, may sometimes be saved by the grace of Krishna. So that was all missing, and it's been restored to our Krishna book. A couple of little ones, sometimes they're pretty funny here. For years, because it makes some sense, you see. There were gorgeous gardens. This is a description of Mathura. When Krishna enters Mathura, there's this wonderful description, and here's part of it. There were gorgeous gardens all around, and the whole city was encircled by cannons so that no enemy could enter very easily. Makes sense, right? You can see them with the cannons, putting a big old cannonball in there. You know, come on, Banasura, we'll get you, you know. No, canals. In other words, moats. Prabhupada said canals. Sometimes he mispronounced these words, and the transcriber, maybe not on enough sleep, you know, all right, that's cannons. They're protecting the city. And that's the way it was for so many years, from 1970 to 1992. 22 years. Devotees would read that, they would visualize cannons in it. Wrong. No. Canals. Oh, excuse me, canals. Now here's another one. Prabhupada used the words brackets, and it came out barricades. Once in the province of Kashi, within the barricade of Varanasi, there was severe drought and practically no rainfall. Not everyone knows that Kashi and Varanasi are two names for the same city. I mean, we know that now, right? But no one knew that in 1970, transcribing. So this is what they had. But what Prabhupada said is, once in the province of Kashi or Varanasi, there was a severe drought. On the tape, Prabhupada said, Kashi, within brackets, Varanasi, becomes within the barricade. You see that? And these things are perpetuated, you know, in other languages also. Okay, one other one, my favorite, I didn't give here, but Samba. Now, Samba is one of Krishna's, you know, famous sons. I forget, you remember who his mother was? Was Jambavati, maybe? I forget. But anyway... So Samba means, you know what it means? Can anyone guess? Who's our Sanskrit scholars here? Saamba. With the mother. He's always with the mother. He's a mother's pet child. So Prabhupada says he's the pet child of the mother. Therefore he's called Samba. So the devotee who's transcribing heard bad instead of pet. He's a pet child. You know, you can understand. So if it came out bad, somehow he's a bad child? No, he's the pet child. Big difference. And it's not listed here, but I fixed that. Now this is just a note. I'll just explain what this is. If you look at the Krishna book, the old Krishna book, there's 89 chapters. Now anyone who knows the 10th canto, you know, there's 90 chapters. Well, what happened? Where do we lose a chapter? Well, it turns out that in the Rasa dance, tragically, the chapter 31, which I highly recommend, is four Gopi Geets, chapter 21, 31, 35, and 47. You have Radharani's Brahmara Geet. These are like known as Gopi Geets. They're famous. So 31 is this famous, you know, where the gopis are singing in separation in the Rasa dance. Krishna's left them. Jayatite dikam janmanavraja shayate indara shasvaratrihi. Everyone should learn this. But, so there's a verse in there, I don't know it that well, where the gopis are praying that Krishna's feet, they're afraid his feet are going to get hurt by the stones on the path. And that verse is very similar to the last verse of the chapter. Now, either Prabhupada thought it was the last verse and didn't go further, or he went further and then recorded over when he turned the tape. But somehow or other, half of that chapter is lost. There's a small chapter. There's only 19 verses. But the last six or eight of them, we don't have. They lost. So it was such a short chapter and there was no colophon. The colophon is the thing at the end where Prabhupada says, thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to chapter 21 of the Krishna book entitled The Song of the Flute, right? So there was no colophon, and they didn't see. So they merged those two chapters, 31 and 32. And therefore they lost a chapter. Now it was peculiar because Prabhupada was giving the right chapter number at the end of all the subsequent chapters, but they didn't know what to do, so they subtracted one, and they ended up with 89 chapters. So I thought, as you see at the end there, I thought it would be a good idea to restore Krishna book to its proper 90 chapters. So even though chapter 31 is very short, it restores both the book to 90 chapters and the Rasa Panchajaya to 5 chapters. And this is the famous 5 chapters of the Rasa dance, but there's only 4 in the old Krishna book. So it's Pancha means 5, so that's a little note on that business. All right, just a few on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then we'll end. If you have any comments or questions, we can entertain them. So here again, now, what happened here... There may have been a, you see, you have to go back, you know, take your mind back before computers, before internet, all of these things. When, for book writing, book editing, they would type out the manuscript, right? A lot of typing was being done. And then the editors would edit it, they have to retype the manuscript in order to have a composing manuscript. And sometimes you have two or three editors, you have, you know, retyping. In the process of doing that, you may lose a line. They may go 2 lines instead of 1 line, and if it makes some sense, you won't catch it. The editors might catch it if it doesn't make sense, or the typist himself would catch it. But if it makes some sense, you go by and you lose a line. So that's what happened here, I think. But this is a really important point that was lost. So here's the transcription of the tape. If one thinks in the society there are many so-called devotees, or there are so many devotees, still one should stick to the society. And if one thinks the society members are not pure devotees, he can directly keep company or in touch with the spiritual master. If there is any doubt, he should consult the spiritual master. Now there's a story behind this which I'll tell. But basically Prabhupada said, don't leave the society and think that you're going to find pure devotees outside, you know, because you'll ruin your spiritual life. But here's what we had that was lost. If one thinks that there are many pseudo-devotees or non-devotees in the Krishna Khan society, one can keep direct company with the spiritual master, and if there's any doubt. Well, what happened to the part about sticking to the society? Lost, you see? Now, this was the 17 books in 2 months marathon, so you can understand, you know, maybe it wasn't intentional, but maybe it was intentional. Anyway, I put it back. Even if there are many pseudo devotees, still one should stick to the society. If one thinks society's members are not pure, one could keep so forth. So I thought that was important to, you know, this was happening in a time. Burijan Prabhu told me about this, because Prabhupada came to see him in Hong Kong. He was trying to hold up together a center there. And there was another devotee that was kind of influencing him. There was a kind of a little bit of an offshoot of ISKCON. And Prabhupada came there and he saw the influence and he was dictating these purports and this came out. You know, sometimes you can read the history of ISKCON in the purports as they go on, fourth canon, fifth canon. At the beginning, you know, the sannyasis, these sannyasis and devotees, they're all doing wonderful. And then in the fourth canon, it says, well, sometimes the sannyasis, they leave, you know, and it's very, you know, unfortunately that happened. Anyway, this is historical, and it definitely should be restored. Still wants to stick to the society. I think it's important instruction. Now here's something you'll find where it doesn't make any sense. You know, this transcription, they, the demigod worshippers, come on, babe. All right. Okay, there we go. I got to get a new one of these. There we go. The demigod worship at least keep their individuality to enjoy life, but the impersonalists, by stopping their individuality, lose all kinds of pleasure, either material or spiritual. This is right from the tape. The Buddhist philosopher's last destination is to become just like stone. It's immovable. Okay, that makes sense. But this doesn't make sense, and this is what was printed. They, demigod worships, retain their individuality to enjoy life. So Prabhupada's comparing, you've got the demigod worshippers, you've got the Buddhists, and then you've got the impersonalists. So of those three, the Mayavadis are worst. The demigod worships at least retain their individuality in order to enjoy life. But the impersonalists who try to lose their individuality also love both material and spiritual pleasure. Now I'm confused. It's supposed to be lose, see? They, along with their individuality, they lose both material and spiritual pleasure. And this part is completely lost, so therefore this doesn't make any sense. The Buddhist philosopher, but now we have the stone is immovable and has neither material. That's a total non sequitur. It's just gibberish. So therefore we restored it. They also lose the last destination of the Buddhists. You see how important it is? Makes sense now. This is in the Ramananda Samvad. Samvad means a conversation with Lord Chaitanya. Very important section of the Madhya Lila Chaitanya Charitamrita. All right, I'm not going to read all that Sanskrit, so don't worry. I'll really put you to sleep. But this is a critical purport, because it's about the importance of initiation. Hello. One does not have to undergo initiation or execute the activities required before initiations. One simply has to vibrate the holy name with his lips. Thus, even a man in the lowest class or chandala can be delivered. Well, that's pretty radical. He needs an explanation, right? You don't have to be initiated. So, I didn't illustrate all this because it's just too voluminous. Shri Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai, Gornitai Ki Jai, so if you just try to understand the importance of this, you know, these books are like for 10,000 years, and it's important to get them right, especially in the critical things about initiation. So this is the part that was left out. In the Bhaktisandarbha, Jiva Goswami describes the importance of deity worship and initiation or diksha as follows. Huge Sanskrit here. This translation wasn't there. There was no translation. Now that's a result of the 17 books in 2 months. You know, they just did not have time to translate it. Many similar passages, Prabhupada wanted his Sanskrit editors to translate. He left it up to them so he could move on to the next book and next purport. So I asked Gopi Pranadana Prabhu to translate it, and this is what he came out with. It is Srimad Bhagavatam's opinion that the process of deity worship is not actually necessary. Just as the specific prescriptions of the Pancharatra and other scriptures do not have to be followed. Now that's also kind of a shocker until you keep reading. The Bhagavatam enjoins that even without practicing deity worship, one can achieve the complete success of human life by any of the other devotional processes. All right. Sorry about that. Hello. Such as simply offering oneself at the Lord's feet. All this was missing. Everything in blue wasn't there. This is new. Offering oneself at the Lord's feet for his protection. Nonetheless, Vaishnavas following the path of Sri Narada, that's us, and his successors, endeavor to establish a personal relationship with the Lord by receiving the grace of a bona fide spiritual master through initiation. And in this tradition, the devotees are obliged at the time of initiation to begin engaging in deity worship. So in this context, initiation means what we call second initiation. Although deity worship is not essential, the material conditioning of most candidates for devotional service requires that they engage in this activity. When we consider their bodily and mental conditions, we find that the character of such candidates is impure and their minds are agitated. This is 500 years ago, Jiva Goswami is writing. We can imagine today. You know, it's really important, right? Therefore, to rectify this material conditioning, the great sage Narada and others have at different times recommended various kinds of regulations for deity worship. So just to let you just reiterate, all of that was not there in the 1975 edition. It was added, and I'm confident that Prabhupada wanted the translation done, but he just didn't have time to do it. He expected his Sanskritists to do it. They ran out of time because of the 2 months restriction. And then this other one also wasn't translated. Oh, best of the Brahmins, Even without initiation, preliminary purification, or acceptance of renounced order, one can attain perfection in devotional service simply chanting the holy names. So the context is, at this part of the CC, that the chanting of the holy name is sufficient, is independent of everything else. But we know from experience that in order to be successful in chanting, we need to avoid the offenses. In order to do that, we need to come together in society. We need the deities and everything Prabhupada gave us, right? And otherwise, all of us just go and sit under a tree and chant Hare Krishna. Is anyone going to do it? No. So we need all of this stuff. But still, this is what the commentators said, and this is what Prabhupada dictated. So we had to translate that. Am I going over time? Oh, I am. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, just to wind it up, I'm not going to go through the rest of it. Conclusion. Can I just read the conclusion? The latest editions are closest to Prabhupada's original words and intended meaning. The argument that Mirlan Gita presents the originals more faithfully, and the 1983 editions are specious. This is a specious argument. It looks good, but it's not true. In other words, the argument looks plausible until you actually examine what was done and why. The same holds true for the other books, CC, Krishna Book, Isha Parishad. The original editors did a great service for Prabhupada and the Sankirtan mission, but for various reasons they made mistakes, which Srila Prabhupada wanted fixed on the reprints, and he wanted them fixed by his trusted editors. So I won't go over again, which is just a repeat of that earlier letter, that please, if you buy books or distribute books, buy them from the BBT. And this way you support the BBT and the whole movement through that. So, I'm sorry I went over time. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Don't forget, there will be CDs outside with this and much more of the presentation. Thank you. Hare Krishna.